So I'd just like to say, if anyone has come to see Paula P today, unfortunately, she's not able to attend. So Bill S has very kindly stepped in for us, and we're very grateful he was able to do that. So this is a main share meeting, and it's great, with great pleasure and gratitude, that we welcome Bill S from Illinois. He's going to share for about 40 minutes, after which we'll open up the meeting for general sharing, or you can ask Bill a question. So thank you so much, Bill, for stepping in for us today. It's lovely to have you here, and the floor is yours.
Thank you so much. How kind. I was asked late last night, at least our time, I don't know what it was over there, to share the meeting. It would be on as Bill sees it. Now it's the main speaker in your recording, and I never know what I'm going to get into in Alcoholics Anonymous. And my sponsors on this platform today, I don't know if I should tell you his name or not, if he'll take offense to it. He's very active in service, and especially in Zoom, he got me started. And last night he was chairing a meeting, and the gal who was speaking for him, her name was Love. And he asked if anyone was here for the first time, and six people said, "I'm here to support my friend Love." And I've been there before, and I couldn't help myself. I turned on, I unmuted my microphone, and I said, "I'm looking for Love. I guess I'm in the wrong place." And he kicked me out of the meeting. So, that's part of the personality, and it's not done with malice or intent. And before I begin, can we just have a little quiet time? God, let the story be mine, but the glory be thine. Amen. I was thinking when I was asked, and Young had picked the page out of it, and he said, "Is that okay?" And it didn't matter to me. You asked me to talk about myself, my favorite subject. I'll find something to say. And I told him I went to bed thinking about what would you talk about with the personality change? And how has my personality been shaped by alcoholism? And I think that's the important thing. And I remember when Bill Cosby had done a skit maybe 50 years before he got in all this trouble, he asked his friend why he did drink so much and did all the drugs. And the guy said, "It enhances my personality." And Bill Cosby said, "Well, what if you're an asshole?" So alcohol and chemicals certainly enhanced my personality, and it was never for the good. And I like in step 10, it says the spiritual life is not a theory. So I want to share something real quick. About 4 days ago, I woke up just loathing myself. And I kept looking at what was going on externally. And I took an early retirement, so I don't have enough money. The transmission on my car fell out, and it wasn't worth putting a new one in, so I'm without a car and all this stuff on the outside. And I wanted to make some changes. I said, maybe I should run back down to Florida, which never really worked for me. Didn't stop me from trying it. And maybe I should get a job, and maybe. And what dawned on me is if I go inside, I can always find the truth. And what has happened is maybe I have been not saying so nice things about people around me. And maybe I was starting to get judgmental at the meetings. And that's not a maybe. What that means is that was what was going on, but it always masquerades itself as something externally. And a guy had called me when I was in Florida, and I was probably struggling. I struggled for a long time in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, not in the program, because I don't believe that I got into the program until it was actually 17 months ago today, that I was thrown out of a trap house in St. Petersburg for non-sufficient funds, and my journey began in spite of the evidence of the way that I looked at things, that there would be no reason for me to come back to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I've been coming for 41 years and couldn't get a sobriety date. That's a long time. I started to think maybe there was something gravely wrong with me beyond alcoholism. Because who would come to a place where they keep track of not drinking and continue to drink? And that was a hopelessness I'd never known before. I ended up in a crisis center. My sponsor actually said I kind of had to describe what was taking place at the end of the road. I had had a surgery after 5.5 years of abstinence. And what that means is I was going to the casino. I was watching stuff on the internet that I would have been embarrassed if my mother saw it. I was not living by any spiritual principles. And I was blotting out my intolerable situation as best I could without drink until I finally couldn't stand being sober for one more minute. And I drank. And what had happened is he had described how I was no longer able to complete probation. 20 years ago, I could do probation for 2 years standing on my head. I know how to do that. Come to a lot of meetings and don't drink. But I made up my mind that it was not a good idea for me to violate this drug court, and I violated anyhow. And then I got on the lam from the law because they were looking for me, and I'm living on the street. Even the guy who was providing my alcohol in whatever form it was said, you know, I could give you this much of this stuff on a daily basis. He said, but that's not how you use. He said, you got to go back to the beginning. And prior to meeting him, I had been making $20,000 a month. And now I'm living homeless in a pair of shorts and a t-shirt. And I have no way to shave. And my dentures are in some storage unit. And I'm embarrassed to go outside. He said, you'll never make it here. And I bring that up because after 5.5 years, what had happened is I had a surgery. I called it a major surgery. And I don't care if you're doing a root canal on me. It's a major surgery when it's mine. It's minor when it's someone else's. And the doctor prescribed a mild narcotic. And I couldn't wait to get the second prescription filled. And when I was picking up an 8-year medallion at my sponsor's home group, because I didn't want to let the fans down, I said to him after the meeting, I said, Larry, I'm having trouble with these pain pills. He said, you're still taking them? It was 2.5 years later. I said, yes. And he said, are you taking them as prescribed? And I said, yes. He said, what's the problem? I said, they're prescribed for my mother. They're prescribed for my sister. I said, I'm knocking at random people's doors. Tell them I need to use the bathroom so I can go through their medicine cabinet. He said, sounds like you violated one of our principles. I said, Larry, I don't want to change my sobriety date because I came here for so long and I thought that recovery has something to do with time. I said, I don't want to change my sobriety date. And he said, you already have. Now you have to stand up at your home group and let them know you've been being dishonest about your sobriety. And almost killed me. My pride almost killed me. It wasn't the pills that were going to kill me. It was the dishonesty. I was so blocked from God. And one day I just couldn't get my hands on any of the medication. And I was kind of left with myself. And I'll tell you what, that little underestimating my opponent put me on a 12-year run. And I realized when I kind of came to or woke up, I thought I had been only out for a few months. 12 years of my life evaporated. And the personality change. And I remember back in the, back around the time my mom and dad had gotten married and started to have children. I don't know if any of you are old enough to remember this. But there was a drug given to women for morning sickness. It was called thalidomide. And what happened is they started to discover, and they didn't know why until they compared notes, that this particular drug during certain periods of the pregnancy was producing babies with these real egregious birth defects. In fact, most of them died. And when they finally realized what was causing it, they quit prescribing the medication. And I kind of look at my alcoholism like that. I believe I came into the world made in the image and likeness of God. And the more I find out what God is, what that means is I was made in love, true love, and love gives. And what happened is I started to violate some principles of spirit. You know, the first time I stole something, it bothered me. The second time I stole something, it didn't bother me so much. And by the third or fourth time, I became immune to a conscience. And what I didn't realize is if I didn't get caught, that didn't mean that there were not consequences, that my whole life was being shaped by the thing that I was doing and pouring inside of myself, just like that medicine that they were giving those mothers. The problem is I couldn't see the defects, but you could. And it talks about in the book, the loneliness that few people know. And the secretary of my home group used to say on a regular basis, He said, selfish people are lonely people. I was so consumed with myself, blocked by fear, dishonesty, resentment, prejudice, the things that were going on inside of my head, and I couldn't stop them. And I didn't realize that I was creating it. You know, can you put the little reading? I don't have my Asbel Caesar book. Can I see the reading in chat still? I know it was there, right? All right, you can pause this so if anyone listens to it, they won't think I'm an idiot. Who cares what they think, right? A personality change sufficient is what it says in the spiritual experience. We have to get over drinking in order to stay alive. So I was at a meeting yesterday or the day before, you know, someone said this statement, which is pretty simple for us. Stopping drinking is not sufficient to keep me stage stopped. I have alcoholism. It centers in my mind. And many things, you know, it says a guy called me down in Florida, like I said, when I was struggling at that time. It was a lucid interval, I guess you would call it. And he called me up and I was explaining to him what my problem was. And he said, have you found your assignment yet? And I said, what the hell is he talking about? And I went to the fear inventory in step four, and it says, we are in the world to play the role that God assigns. And all my life, I've been playing a role that I have assigned, that other people have assigned. If I could only be this, if I could only wear that, if I could only have her, if I could only get this, my life would be okay. The thing about, I didn't know how to live life on life's terms. I didn't know how to live life on God's terms. I had smoked it up. I had drank it up. The dishonesty was blocking me from the truth. And I had a sponsor down in Florida before I left, and he said magical words to me, and I didn't know how powerful it was. He said, you might have to stop lying to get honest. And I thought that was the stupidest thing that I've ever heard. Let me get honest, and then I'll stop lying. It never works that way. I was working with a guy recently that says he's having trouble with step two and three. He doesn't know, angry at God, can't believe in God, whatever it was. And he had just gotten out of jail on his second or third DUI in a short period of time, and three driving under a revoked driver's license. And he was on his way to pick someone up for work. And I said, you don't have a driver's license. He said, my life will be unmanageable if I don't pick these guys up for work. I said, it sounds like your life is unmanageable for picking them up from work and getting caught. And what dawned on me is I cannot come to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity if I'm still engaging in the insanity. I can't grasp the concept of honesty or develop that concept, let alone be rigorously honest if I'm still lying, cheating, and stealing. I never connected the dots that every time I told a lie, I poured something down inside of me that morphed my personality into someone who was very unbecoming and antisocial. I almost got emotional. My sponsor texted me. He was on the meeting. He was inviting me here. I said, well, they've asked me to speak. And he always said, look at God. And I always wanted to be something in Alcoholics Anonymous, but didn't know how. And one day they print these flyers on these Zoom things. And I'm sure I'm all over the place, but that's what you get today. You know, 8 hours notice, no sleep, thinking about what I'm going to say to impress everyone in the morning, which never works. And he sent a flyer. He asked me to speak for him at one of these Chicago meetings. And I hate letting people know I'm speaking. And my sponsor had always said, that's not your job to determine who's going to come or what their interpretation is or whether they come because of what's going on in your head. You got friends in your life, let them know. And I sent a flyer to a gal who had a similar experience with pain pills and was struggling. And she didn't come to the meeting. And I shared that. I said, I hate at the meeting. I said, I hate doing that, but I did it because that was the instruction. And about 3 hours after the meeting, I got a text from her, and she said, in my opinion, and I want to say this for love, and I mean it for the well-being. And she hasn't seen me in 5 years because I've been down in Florida and over in Cleveland. She said, I think you shouldn't comment for 90 days at meetings. And I didn't take offense to this. Because what I discovered is selfish people are easily offended, in my case, quite often. But I was kind of okay, and I invited her to it, but I prayed about it and asked God if he wanted me to be quiet, let me know. And I swear to God, if there hasn't been 15 invitations to speak since then, and that was 30 days ago, there'd be none at all. And I've got to trust that what I have to do, though, is watch my ego, because I love the limelight. See, my personality is loud and colorful. Bill Wilson says the alcoholic howls at the moon and the moon just won't have him. And I've been howling at the moon all my life. When I was down in Florida in 1987, they came out with a supplement to the Jacksonville, Florida Times, and it says they discovered the smartest guy in the world lived in Florida. I bought three copies of the newspaper. I figured they were talking about me. I was going to send it to my mom. And they weren't talking about me. They were talking about this 13-year-old boy that lived in a suburb of Duval County. And he was so smart, they couldn't prepare an IQ test to capacitate his intelligence. That's how smart he was. He was getting some master's or doctorate degree at 13 years old. He was working on a cure for a cancer they hadn't named yet. And when the reporters went to find out what to attribute his brilliance to, they suspected it had to do with DNA, his stock, his upbringing. Sure enough, his mother was a physicist and his father was a doctor or a pharmacist. I don't remember the exact details. But one of the reporters went to this 13-year-old little boy and said to him, what do you attribute your brilliance to? He said, when my mom and dad go to sleep at night, I sit at God's feet and I listen to his thoughts. And the reporter said, what's he look like? He said, I don't look, I sit and listen. And I thought, how come God never tells me his thoughts? And what dawned on me after I took a fourth step is that if God was screaming at me, I couldn't have heard him, because what was going on inside of me was so loud that it blotted out everything. And worse than that, I discovered in a fourth step and in a fifth step, is that I had put it all there. I had created, yes, some things happened in childhood. They had me seeing a psychiatrist at 5 years old. In the second grade, when I'm 7 years old, I wasn't invited to the other students' birthday parties because everyone knew that there was something wrong with little Billy. It was a spiritual malady that was growing inside of me, and I couldn't stop it. By the time I was 13 years old, everyone knew in the new school system that we moved to that there was something defective about me. And I hadn't even had a drink yet. And when I picked up a drink, it's like I was able to come in from out there. I was able to be at peace with myself, even for just a moment. But it didn't last long, because when you have that type of spiritual malady, which may be generational, my dad was an addict, my grandfather's, alcoholism gallops through our life. It doesn't run. And all of a sudden, I woke up the beast, and in short order, I was in a treatment center. I didn't get my fill. I didn't get my money's worth. And I'd come to AA, and I'd listen to people. This was in Cleveland, where AA was celebrated back in 1981. And when they told the story, they would get on these long drunks for 30 years, and I would just salivate. And I'd know I wasn't an alcoholic because I didn't drink long enough. I didn't have those consequences. Had I been paying attention or someone talked about the malady, I knew once I picked one up, I never wanted to stop. I had the allergy, no doubt. And I had the obsession of the mind. Sometimes I'd be thinking about getting high or getting drunk, and my body would get this irritable bowel syndrome going on. My teeth would start to clatter. I mean, I was high before I got high. I got that. But what I never understood, it was the spiritual malady that seemed to be setting those things in motion. They would set that obsession in motion. I would be so uncomfortable in my own skin. And if you're not an alcoholic because you don't meet the description of drinking long enough, hard enough, and often enough, why would you do what it takes to recover from a disease you don't believe you have? And that was kind of my story in and out of AA for a bunch of years, thinking that I didn't drink because I didn't want to. And when I drank, I wanted to. But if you looked at the evidence of my life, it didn't make any sense for me to drink, because I got all those things I told you on the outside would make me whole. I got a wife whose dad was the richest guy in the town. Never told anyone. That's why I married her. I remember that she was going out with a good friend of mine for a long time, and he was I'm selfish and self-centered. I knew that her dad was worth $10 million. At the time, $10 million was a lot of money. And I made a decision based on self to be with her, to betray that friendship for what I could get out of life. You know, she was at the top of my fourth step. I was mad at her because she divorced me 6 months before her trust fund came due. I put in 8 years for that money, you know what I mean? But of course, I blamed her for divorcing me. She left me because I cheated on her, but it was her fault. She'd never caught me cheating on her if she stayed at work till 5 o'clock like she was supposed to. And that's what the book said, to conclude that others were wrong, was as far as most of us ever got. And I thought, look what these people did to me. They had all this money, enticed me along on the fishing line, and then dropped me at the end, the story of my life. And I could never see the fact that I made decisions. And when you make a decision to betray a friendship, guess what? Your personality changes. My personality started to morph. I started to get further and further away from my assignment, and I never knew it. You know, the subtlety of this disease is we're led in time to pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization, and I don't have to be drinking to have that happen. I can be stuck in self, blocked from God, blocked from my fellows. And when you're all alone in yourself, that's pretty pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, because I'm stuck with the guy who's given me all the bad ideas and been trying to kill me all my life. I could never see that. What I never took into consideration is a daughter would come out of that union. And then when my wife found out that I cheated on her more than once, because I left my fourth step out, I'm a real bright guy. And she retaliated, just like the book says. And not only she denied me the ability to see my daughter, she denied my mother the opportunity to have that granddaughter in her life, my brothers and sisters and their kids, nieces and nephews. Decision based on self in 1984 still has rippling effects today. That's the way I step on people's toes. I've never been right with my friend in AA, and not been satisfied with it. You know, I talked to him 10 years later. He's married, has a successful life. He actually speaks all over the world. Everything that I wanted to do for my ego or for my self-centeredness was granted to the other people that I did the things that I thought were necessary to get there. I guess I'm the kind of guy who wants to sign up for college and then have them mail me a diploma next week, go to the gym and look like my sponsor, you know, without having to work out. I always want something for nothing. And then when I don't get it, relying on my thinking, I start to hate you because it seems like it just comes naturally to you, but I never take into account that you do the work. Those are all things that shaped and morphed my personality. I remember in the movie The Godfather 3 when Al Pacino became the patriarch of the family and he was out in the garden with the bishop. And all of a sudden he starts coughing, his eyes is running, and he blows his nose, and the priest, the bishop, whatever his title was, asked him what was wrong. And he named all these physical and medicinal reasons, pneumonia, whatever he had, he named them, and there was a list. And the priest looked at him and he said, "When is your last confession?" And he said, "I haven't confessed in 40 years. And he started to cry. He said, "I killed my brother. I had my father's son murdered." And the priest gave him the absolution or whatever they do in the Catholic faith. And then he said this, and I'll never forget it. He said, "That which we keep inside of ourselves makes us sick." And the reason I've been running around driving people out of my life and blaming you for my bad life and hating you for your good one is because of my dishonesty, my self-centeredness, my fear, my resentment. The very things that I'm to watch for in my life on a daily basis and do something about them right away. Because I don't want to go back to being the personality that I was. I don't want to have to go back to being the center of the world. I don't want to go back being blocked from God by my own hand. You know, I chaired my home group up in Cleveland. I brought up a topic of love. We use that word a lot. You know, we meet a new guy to me, you know, we love you, we love you. It's all that. We love a lot of people here, you know. I've been raised in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've heard so many wonderful things. If I'd known they were this value, I'd have written them down. Selfish people don't love. They use people. But I thought about it, you know, all of a sudden something happens inside of me and I start to attack the manifestations of self, and I start to be accountable, and I share them and say, what, here's what I've made of myself at my own hands. If I can do that, it makes room for the grace of God to enter me and to start infiltrating me with the love that I've blocked out of my life. And what story was I talking about? The love. I don't know. It was something important I wanted to say. I got sidetracked. I do that occasionally. Sometimes I think I need to go see a psychiatrist and get treated to slow down my mind. But my sponsors remind me, there's no chemical solution for a spiritual malady. I brought up the topic of love. You see, all I have to do is talk for a little bit and my mind comes right back to the mooring that it's supposed to be at. And I gave the definition of love, and I said, I think I'm using a reliable source. And I went to that place in the good book where it gives the definition of love. And the first thing it says is love is patient. Love is kind. And when it got down to about the seventh stanza, it says love keeps no record of wrongs. And I was stunned. I stopped right there and I said, oh my God, my fourth step was a record of all the wrongs that I thought the world and God perpetrated against me. All the people I was afraid of, I was keeping track. All my misconducts, which came out on step eight on my list of people that I need to make amends to. And what dawned on me is as each one of those names is crossed off the list, that means I've made amends. I've done what I was supposed to do, or I asked them to forgive me for hating them. The more that list begins to evaporate, the more love begins to infiltrate my life. The reason I'm blocked from love is because I've been keeping records of all the wrong things that are going on. And it describes that before I get to step three. It talks about like me hanging out on the beach with my sponsor, complaining about the sad state of the nation, the transgenders, the gays, the blacks, the whites, whatever I come complaining about, the politics, the Democrats, Republicans, and the independents. It says, whatever I'm complaining about, am I not concerned with me, me, me? That's all I was ever concerned with. I don't know anything about politics or trends. I know nothing about it, but I got an opinion about everything. And if you'll listen to me, I'll share my opinion with you. And when I do that, it's never positive. It's never healthy. And I think in the 24-hour day book, about 4 days in a row, it talks about the poison of gossip and criticism. And I don't know how long I got to talk, but I want to share this story because it just brings up Alcoholics Anonymous in a nutshell. I had a friend of mine in St. Petersburg, and he had burned up all his opportunities at detox and treatment. He had no insurance and whatnot. And there was a 12-step room, they called it down there, where they would let drunks who had nowhere to go sleep on the table for 30 days. And all they had to do is go to the meetings, rely on the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, not drink and not start any trouble, and they could stay there. He could do about half of that. He just couldn't get along. He was so riddled with fear, and I understand that fear. And he started trouble, and they had to ask him to leave. And then another guy who had gone through that same room about 4 years prior to that had gotten a job and had a house, and he would take drunks who could stay sober but couldn't get along well with people at this 12-step room, and he let him sleep on the floor of his house. Same premise. You got to stay sober, rely on the fellowship, go to meetings, and don't start any trouble. And my friend could do about half of that. Of course, he started trouble in the house because he was driven by self and didn't want to stop running the show. And the other guy, Chris, had to ask him to leave. And he had 60 days sober. For the next 30 days, and this was a small community in St. Pete, every time someone asked, is anyone having trouble staying sober, a topic for discussion, Claude would bring up this guy, Chris, and tell everyone that he had evidence that Chris was a pedophile. And it would have almost destroyed someone's reputation, but in Alcoholics Anonymous, the people that are in recovery are very forgiving and tolerant. They have a funny way of looking at things. And what happened after 30 days of him creating this gossip and slander about this member, he found himself on the south side of St. Pete in a very dangerous place. He knew he was going to get high and he couldn't stop himself. And he said, the only thing I did right for the 90 days was get phone numbers. He said, if I did nothing right, I had phone numbers. And he said, I went to the payphone. He said, I knew I was in trouble. This was a while ago. And he started, I started to call the numbers on my list. And he said, number disconnected, got a recording, wrong number. He said he got to the last name on the list and he called the number and the guy answered the phone and he said, this is Claude. He said, I'm in trouble. I'm going to get high and I can't stop myself. And the guy said, where are you at, Claude? And he said, I'm on the south side of St. Pete. Where are you? And the guy said, I'm by the Clearwater Airport. I'm about 35 minutes away. Can you stay right where you're at for 35 minutes? He said, I will try. And he said, 15 minutes later, the guy that I've been spreading these rumors about was the one that saved my life. I can't afford to talk too bad about any of you in Alcoholics Anonymous because I don't know who God's going to use to save my life. I desperately need you, and the disease of alcoholism starts to find fault with you as soon as I meet you, because I'm afraid. And if I don't know you, I know you're better than me. You're different than me. You'll know things about me. I got to quit listening to my head. And what dawned on me is I had told that story at a meeting in York, Pennsylvania for a good friend of mine. And it dawned on me, the guy who was spreading the gossip was looking at Chris from where he was coming from. And when Chris got the call to go help him, Chris was looking at Claude from where Chris was. Chris had had a spiritual awakening and he knew that Claude was sick because only sick people would find fault and criticize and judge and gossip about people trying to save their life. Valuable lessons you guys have taught me over the years. As soon as I could stop lying, then I quit taking things that didn't belong to me. I quit watching that garbage on the internet that warped my perception of females. And I quit talking disrespectfully to them. All of a sudden, I quit going to the casino and gambling my check away. And I realized I had done none of those things on my own. God started to change things in me, and it started with me participating by not lying. I quit lying. I started to get honest. And when I got honest, I could discover the truth. I got up this morning. I asked God to direct my thinking. I asked him to not make me so wishy-washy in my talk to you guys. And my sponsor came on here and said, you're in the big league now. They're recording you, so I'm sure I'm all over the place. But guess what? With the exception of the fact that you have it recorded, I'll deny it in a court of law. I love my life today. I'll tell you what. My sponsor just lost his mom in February. And the day after he buried her, they had him speaking in Alcoholics Anonymous. We talked about that, that God knew what was going to happen in the future and had him prepared to speak at that meeting. My mom's in an assisted living, and up till 5 or 10 years ago when I realized the condition of her life, my mom was the only mom that was going to live forever. That's the story I was okay with. My mom's not going to live forever. But I'll tell you what, I've been able to see her over the last year and a half, 2-3 times a week on average, to go spend time with her and to feed her and to sit with her and to buy her milkshakes. Remember all the things she did to keep us together as a family, because like I told you, my dad was an addict. I believe my mom would have prostituted herself if she had to keep us together, because my mom had good Christian values to raise her kids and to be a mom. She taught me everything I needed to know by the time I was 7 years old, and for the next 40 years, I got rid of each and every one of those values. I surrendered 17 months ago today. And one by one, you and God have been giving me back my principles and my values. I spoke at a meeting once in Cleveland, and a lady jumped up after the meeting and said, your mother's a saint. And I kind of rehearsed in my mind why I said, you can say nothing about my mom other than I'm staying at her house. And she wasn't talking about what I said. My mom had helped her get sober some 13 years prior to that. And she said, as I've been reciting my recovery and my progress in AA, and your mother's been watching my life just get better and better, She's been telling me about her son who's in Florida drinking and drugging himself to death, that struggles so much for alcoholics and with Alcoholics Anonymous. And your mother said she dedicated her life to praying for that son. And she said, tonight I get to see the evidence of answered prayers. This is some powerful stuff in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor, he takes an extra moment of time for those who struggle in the room. Most alcoholics don't get to AA. And most of us, once we get here, don't get to die sober. It's not because AA doesn't work, and it's not because we're bad people. It's the nature of the disease. It demands treatment. And if I don't treat it with a spiritual program of recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous, I will treat it with alcohol. It's just the nature of the disease. Thank you so much for asking me to share. I hope that I met your criterion. Thank you so much.